Hello and welcome to Sea Views. I'm Julia Gosling and I'm delighted to be here in Portsmouth International Port with Ben McInnes, who's the harbour master here at Portsmouth. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you, and pleased to be on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm delighted to have you with me. And usually my guests are actually somewhere else and we're doing this online because they're in other countries, but Ben is actually on my patch in Portsmouth. So for anyone who's watching the video content, I'm here with a lovely backdrop of Portsmouth International Port behind us. Your workplace, Ben?
Yeah, I'm a Portsmouth or Pompey boy, born and bred, so it's an honour to be looking after part of the harbour and all the marine activities associated with it.
Right. So, Ben, do you want to just let me know a little bit about your role? Most of what I cover is about maritime safety, and obviously that's probably a big part of your role here, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So Portsmouth's a unique harbour in that we're a dockyard port. So the Royal Navy operate one of their largest naval bases here. So we have two harbour masters in Portsmouth, King's Harbour Master, and then I'm the harbour master for Portsmouth International Port. So we deal with all the commercial shipping into Portsmouth, and he deals with all the military side, but they maintain overall control of traffic within the harbour. And I'm the authority for pilotage, so I look after all the safety of marine pilotage within the harbour and the pilotage exemption certificate for scheme for ferries that are operating in and out of the harbour.
It is a unique harbour, isn't it, in a lot of ways, because you have got so many different movements out there and different activities, haven't you?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, right down from leisure craft, there's like a lot of sailing clubs within the harbour, and the whole western side of the harbour has yacht moorings and marinas, to the fishing fleet and the Camber and Gunwharf Quays form part of my statutory area. Everything from super yachts to small yachts and the fishing boats in the Camber to work boats and all the way up to some of the largest cruise ships in the world. And then on the King's Harbour Master's patch, obviously we've got some of the biggest warships in the world as well, with the Queen Elizabeth class carriers being based here and the destroyer fleet. So yeah, it's a lot going on, lots to manage.
The port as an environment, you have got port workers, your own staff, but you've also got all these general public, people who don't really know what the risks are or the dangers are. Is that something that kind of keeps you awake at night? Is it one of the areas you worry about or that you put things in place?
Well, yeah, not necessarily, no. On the water, we have to consider leisure users. So the King's Harbour Master is in charge of the area around the harbour entrance, and that being the narrowest point,
yes, very narrow.
We've got large shipping versus small yachts and pleasure craft, dinghies. So they run this small boat channel, which keeps them out of the main channel, and then they police that using a combination of volunteer harbour patrol, their own staff with a rib on the water, and the Ministry of Defence police if people need talking to or educating on the water. So we try and keep leisure and commercial traffic separated through that. The small boat channel is managed by a general direction, which is enforceable by law, so you could be taken to court for a breach of that. And everything else, we use the ship's horn.
Yes,
give them a good blast on a horn. Yeah, exactly that.
Hear if somebody's getting, maybe a visitor's coming in on a small boat and they haven't realised.
Yeah,
and then,
exactly. Yeah. So if you hear five blasts on the ship's whistle, it's generally one of the ferries that getting irate with a yacht or concerned. Yeah, exactly. Or for example, on a cruise ship, I'll give one long blast as we come towards the entrance, because sometimes you'll have outbound yachts and they don't realise there's a 75,000 ton ship behind them. It just concentrates their minds if you give them a blast on the whistle and focuses their attention that something big is coming.
It's noticeable, isn't it? And what about all the drivers coming in and all the passengers who are getting on, the lorry drivers. Yeah. You know, obviously the port has got its own risks, hasn't it?
Exactly. And the port environment is inherently dangerous in that there's a lot of risk to be managed. So we reduce those risks by implementing control measures. So we're here now in the passenger terminal. The passengers will come through their check-in here. Then they'll go downstairs and they'll be taken by bus straight to the ship. So we remove the risk of them walking around that port environment by busing them direct to the ship. Cars that are coming through to France and Spain, motorhomes and that sort of thing, the providers or the ship companies will provide their own ground staff. So similarly to an airport where you've got ground handling staff and you've got your check-in teams, the ferry companies will have those staff for check-in, and then out on the ground there'll be marshals that are making sure all the traffic is kept in to the right lane and going in the right direction, so we
manage it, like, yeah, exactly, reduce the risk, yeah, all the areas,
exactly. I mean, everything's done on the ALARP principle, that we reduce risk to as low as reasonably practicable.
Earlier you walked me around very kindly and showed me some of the developments here in the port, so I was really interested to know that this is a very green terminal, isn't it?
So we've built one of the most efficient and green terminals in the UK. We've got everything from one of the largest solar arrays in the country, which means we're a net producer of energy, and we can sell back to the grid.
We can't quite see it, but it's just around
the corner. There's a few panels just in the background, but basically every roof in the port has got solar panels on it, and we're trying to suck as much energy out of the sun as we can get. We've got a container-sized battery out in the restricted area, which we can store energy and run the terminal overnight, for example, or we can charge cars from that battery. All the vehicles within the port are electric powered, so all our port vans and that we operate at the port are electric. We've got things like living walls here in the terminal, so we're capturing carbon from the air and then producing oxygen. So everything in this terminal is designed to be green and to support our ambition to be carbon neutral by 2030,
which is great. And you're gonna also bring in the facility for the vessels to be on shore power, which is quite a
It's a massive project. So we are currently starting to dig up the port. We've already started demolition of some of the older buildings within the port to support the project. So we're going to have a 15 megawatt shore power installation, which will be multi-phase and a multi-berth. So we're going to have three berths fitted with shore power. And we've had significant funding from the government to assist us with that as part of the ZEVI project. And the main goal of that project is centred around our customer Brittany Ferries, who have invested heavily in two ships that are going to be LNG powered, but they're hybrid vessels, so they've got battery power. And the concept would be that they'll cross the channel on gas, which is better for the environment than diesel and the heavy fuel oil, although it's still not an entirely green solution. But when they get to the fairway buoy and they're coming into Portsmouth, they will switch over to battery power. So they'll be arriving with zero emissions, coming through the city, the pilotage on zero emissions, berthing, plugging in and charging their ships while they're alongside, again, zero emissions, and leaving on the same. And then once they're clear of the city limits and on the fairway buoy, then they switch back gas power to go over the channel. So, you know, to have that project of Brittany's linked up with our own supply of shore power is going to really benefit the local environment for the city residents, who are vicariously owners of the port. The city owns the port and the residents own the city through their council tax. So, you know, so that's something we can really shout about and be proud of, that project is happening and we're spades in the ground.
It's exciting for Portsmouth actually to be ahead with that. And I mean, I see it from my own house, you know, the ships are literally coming in and out the whole time and they're probably 100 yards from my window, so I'll actually benefit from that directly.
Exactly. And you know, we are an inner city port, we've got residential areas across the road from the port, and we've got school within close proximity, so the fact that we can reduce our carbon footprint and improve air quality for the residents is something that we really want to do, and we're working with our customers to expand that. Certainly the cruise sector is really interested, they want to plug in now, and we'll be able to provide to the cruise berth with a multi-user flexible arrangement, so the ferries have got a more fix, we know the positions of their plugs, so we can do it on a system that will be faster for them to connect. But with the cruise ships, because there's so many different vessel types, they've got different connections, we need the flexibility on the main cruise berth because we need to be able to move it in positions and then use a variety of different plugs, to use a non-technical term, to enable them to draw from that bank of...
But you'll be able to do that.
Yeah, not just that. We'll be able to do a ferry and a cruise ship at the same time, or two ferries at the same time, or if everything's small enough, three ships at the same time. So, you know, that's going to be a major improvement for the port. And we really need to work with the government to try and incentivize that, because at the moment, shore power is not a cheap thing. So ports can't afford to get the power onto the port. And once we get it onto the port and to the customer, passing that cost on is going to be cost prohibitive. So it certainly won't be making the ports any money. But all the time there's incentive to run on fossil fuels like diesel, which is they can get certain tax exemptions from them, but we're not seeing those reductions or incentives for shore power. So we really hope over the next few years that the government see the benefit in incentivizing shore power, and that they can work with us and the ultimate ship users to offer that electricity at a reduced rate through subsidies or
taxation. I mean, this could be a real benchmarking
taxation.
Sort of example, couldn't it, when you're fully operating on the shore power for the vessels. So hopefully others would follow, but also government would recognise some of the benefits there as well.
Exactly. So for the ZEVI project that we're working on with the government, part of that was... when we first look at, you know, what do we need to do for the next 20 to 50 years? How can we reduce our carbon footprint? How can we reduce CO2 emissions? We had to have a baseline. So around the port and around the city and the immediate area, there's measuring equipment that is measuring those emissions from the ships and how much is getting onto the shore. So we've got our baseline. We know what we're currently putting as a whole, the business, including our customers, but they will see tangible results from that project. And part of the deal with our funding is that we share results with the wider shipping community and port community. So, you know, it won't just be us benefiting from that. The learnings will be available in the industry for other ports to take stock of what we've achieved and what worked, what hasn't worked, in order that we can help other UK ports achieve their own goals.
Yeah, share the learning. Actually, it's interesting that you're talking about power, because another podcast that we did a while ago was about green fuels and all the changes that are coming in shipping and what the new power sources, propulsion systems will be on some of the ships. And obviously a lot of that comes down to what on earth do the ports do. So, you know, a lot of the storage facilities for these different potential types of new fuels are quite big, you know, you need more space for them, and obviously some of them have got their own dangers. Is that something you've got to look at here as well in Portsmouth International Port?
Yeah, certainly. So with the shore power projects with Brittany, we had to look at LNG as being an alternate fuel, and at present we only were able to offer diesel and heavy fuel oils as our offering from a bunker barge. So we looked at all the options with them, from storing ashore and in gas tanks, right down to bringing in lorries, lots of lorries to refuel a ship, which wouldn't actually be environmentally sensible at all, to what we are going to offer, which is another barge now coming in with a gas tanker barge, which will refuel those ferries. And similarly, we're keeping an eye on hydrogen and the application of that, so that we see that there's a tug now in Europe that's just been launched, which is going to run on hydrogen, and there's battery powered tugs. So it's something we need to keep into account, as if we're going to operate these future fuels, how do we store this energy and how can we bring it in? Because one thing we're definitely not blessed with in Portsmouth is space.
Yes.
You know, we're one of the most densely populated cities in the country, and we're just marginally behind London. There is no space in Portsmouth. We do not have space here at the port. You know, we desperately need more land, and we can't really support large tanks or energy farms or storage facilities in the port. So yeah, it's definitely something we have to consider and keep in check.
And you're not even going to be the only port with that issue, are you? With, you know, a lot of ports are already within, you know, well within cities, and as you've already said, you've got a lot of residential areas real close up as well. So again, that brings its own safety issues, doesn't it, with some of these fuel storage.
Exactly.
And energy storage systems.
And for me, I can't really see any other way than barge transport being used for small ships being used to transfer any fuel or future fuel to the ships from the sea. And it might present other opportunities for smaller ports or areas where there is land to become energy hubs or storage facilities to promote that. So, you know, as ships, and we're seeing cruise ships with LNG now and the ferries here switching to LNG, that will open new opportunities for other businesses to store and operate barges for bunkering those ships.
It's interesting to see how it's actually practically happening. It's really interesting to talk to you about all the stuff you're thinking about in the port. And you know, power is another thing that is a hot topic at the moment. So I went to electric vehicle maritime safety conference just last week, actually. That was a port skills and safety conference, and there was a lot of ports, a lot of shipping companies there, some government associations and industry associations there, and there was quite a frightening presentation from the scientists about the dangers of lithium-ion batteries and the electric vehicle batteries, and what happens when you get a problem on a ship or in a port, because obviously their cars are being stored before they go on. Is this one of your risks as well that you're looking at or considering?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the port's risk, we have to be careful that we don't overmanage our customers' risks. So we were at the same conference, so our head of compliance, Chris, was there and keeping appraised of all the latest developments. And certainly I've been to port safety conferences and shipping safety conferences where that is now a topic which is sort of hot on the agenda. We do have to recognise that battery fires within electric cars isn't something that happens frequently.
It's, thank goodness at the moment.
I've owned an electric car for 4 years and as yet no major fire. It's been absolutely brilliant, but certainly, the traditional firefighting techniques on vehicle decks needs to be reassessed.
It doesn't work, does it, on the battery, electric vehicle battery fires? It's totally different.
That's right, yeah.
Way of tackling it, if you can tackle it.
And on from that, the product of that fire, the smoke, is actually, the fumes are hazardous as well. So it's not a case of with a traditional fire, you know, the advice is get down on the floor, stay out of the smoke. Well, in a vehicle fire with electric batteries involved, then that floor layer can also have some toxicity. So that is something that the shipping lines need to work with to assess their own risks on board ship and come up with a suitable firefighting plan to mitigate those risks.
And I suppose also, there aren't obvious solutions right now, because that was apparent in the conference, but there was talk about obviously how important training is for port staff and for seafarers to actually be able to recognise when it is that type of fire or incident or explosion, because it does require a totally different approach. And that was quite frightening, I thought, to sort of see how dangerous they are. You're sometimes some of the first people to sort of see people and interact with seafarers when they come in your port. Welfare, we talked about welfare on my podcast before for seafarers. What do you do here in the port in terms of welfare of seafarers and support for them? I think it's great that as the harbour master here, you are a seafarer still. Mm. You've been a seafarer in other roles, and you really understand it, don't you? And from the welfare point of view, it's really interesting to see how you're applying that to your role here in the port, that you are aware of that kind of situation on those ships, and that you're potentially the first person, you know, to go on board.
Yeah, exactly. When I do write these letters, I always include the sentence that a ship is supposed to be a place of work, not a prison. And I mean, I used to do 4-month trips at sea, and it's not unheard of for the Filipino and Indian crews to be doing eight-month contracts. And for them to be stuck on a steel tin for 8 months and not put foot on grass and a bit of soft mud is disheartening.
It really does.
And they're there for their families and to send money home, but they're people and they need to go ashore and just go to the supermarket and buy deodorant or some sweets or something a treat, you know, eat something that's not ship's food and just go for a walk for 2 miles and see something that's not the ship. It's really important for mental health, and there's no reason for them to be holed up on board. So yeah, for me, very important. And the ship's chaplains come down and do visits with Stella Maris and the Mission to Seafarers. So we work closely with them.
Have you got one of the port centres here?
We did have a container over in the cargo terminal, which wasn't really being used. So what we've got, my city Wi-Fi here now, which is free Wi-Fi, which is port wide. So the seafarers, even on the ships, can access that. But the terminal's got super fast Wi-Fi, so they're welcome to come here.
And they've got the cafe.
Exactly,
the
they can have a coffee, high speed internet, there's a shop here. So all the seafarers welcome to come and use that. And to be honest, one of the reasons that the containerized seafarer centre didn't work so well was that we are from the cargo terminal, less than 10 minutes walk from city centre. So you've got your Costas there, your McDonald's, free access to Wi-Fi, the shops they like to visit, the supermarket is all within 10 minutes walk from the port. So we're quite lucky, and we're not an oil terminal in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, you're bang in the middle of
exactly.
The city.
We're here in the city centre, and there's, you know, there's cafes, pubs, and you know, your McDonald's or whatever they need is within 10 minutes walk. So
I've really enjoyed talking to you, like actually in your place of work, and just practically seeing how you go about thinking about maritime safety at work.
No, it's been a pleasure, and always good to chat about ships.
Yes, is what we like. Thanks very much for joining me, Ben. It's been really interesting having you. Thank you.
No, thank you. See the blade come in there. Look.
Fishing vessel grateful and family of Coast Guard. We are reading you out and speaking.